This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, keeping track of the air quality in Greater Cincinnati. Starting us off today, the Beyond Civility Project encourages forms of communication that promote understanding of people's opinions. The organization teaches thoughtful communication through a series of workshops, lectures, and programs. Next month, Beyond Civility is presenting the panel discussion, Implicit Bias, understanding how your biases may contradict your chosen values. And here to explain and discuss implicit bias are Xavier University Professor of Philosophy, Ethics, Religion, and Society, Dr. Gabe Gottlieb, Senior Mediator for the Center for Resolution of Disputes, B. Larson, and retired Chief Circuit Mediator, United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, Robert Black. And B and Robert are co-founders of Beyond Civility. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bob, B, and Gabe, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, so I'm fascinated by this. People can have a bias and not even be aware of it. How true is that if someone is self-aware?
Yeah, it's a great question. We often think of ourselves as self-aware, and when we think of ourselves as self-aware, it's typically of what we explicitly believe or what values we explicitly hold. But it turns out that we also have implicit biases or implicit attitudes that are unconscious, that are below the level of consciousness, and which actually affect how we act, what decisions we make, and how we engage with other people. And the surprising thing about this is that these implicit biases are often at odds with the explicit values or explicit beliefs we hold.
So we generally tend to some other characteristics. We generally tend to hold implicit biases that favor our own in-group. Is that something that's true of this?
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a test, we can talk about that later, but there's a test that many people have taken called the implicit association test. And what many people find when they take this test is that they have a bias against people who are not in their group. So if one is straight, they might have a bias against homosexuals or gay people. If one is white, they might have a bias against black people or people of other ethnic backgrounds.
But we tend to think of bias as being unfavorable towards something or someone, but it can be the other direction, right? You can have a favorable bias, right?
Oh, certainly. And you could have a what you might call a pro-white bias or a pro-gay bias. It can go both ways.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join us. And B, how are implicit biases formed? How do these come about?
Well, when we're very young, the society or the group perhaps that we grow up in, we take in their values simply almost by osmosis. It just we form our opinions being with other people who have those opinions, particularly when we're young.
How much of a role do media and the entertainment industry play in forming implicit biases?
I'm sure it's significant, yeah.
So how do you test for implicit bias?
Well, there are a number of ways of doing it. The most popular or most researched way of doing it is what's known as the implicit association test. And this is a test you can take online with a computer. And I'll give the example of the implicit association test for a race bias. In that test, you'll see images of black faces and white faces, and you'll be asked to associate those faces with different words, positive and negative words. And when taking this test, it turns out those who have an implicit bias, let's say against black people, will have a tendency to associate negative words with black faces and positive words with white faces. When you take the test, you have to quickly press a button, and that's really important. You have to quickly press a button to identify the association. The reason it's important that you quickly do that is because implicit biases are automatic associations that we have. And in order to test them, we have to find ways to quickly assess whether or not they're there. So if we're asked to step back and deliberate on black faces and positive or negative words, we'll reflectively step back and think of the black face and say, oh, I don't have a bias against black people. I'll associate the black face with a positive word. But if we're asked to do this quickly, our implicit biases are automatically activated and, in a sense, trump the explicit associations we might value and hold.
So I guess the idea is then that if you hesitate on a certain picture and word combination, that's showing that the bias is at work and making you hesitate?
Exactly. That there's some friction there that you're trying to process and it takes you longer. And you might get it, but it took you longer to do it. Or in some cases, you might actually make a mistake. And when you take the test, you, in my experience, is you kind of feel that friction internally. You feel yourself trying to associate the words with the face in the way that you explicitly want to. And you see yourself make mistakes, and that's very frustrating.
But you know, Mark, you suggested that we tend to favor our own in-group. What was surprising to me in the tests that I took, I'm an elderly person, and I found that I had a moderate preference for young as opposed to old. And as a woman who thinks of herself as a feminist, I found I had a moderate association for males with careers and females with family. So my culture has invaded my mind, despite what I believe explicitly I feel.
Well, that's interesting because I took the test, too, and I did it on body types, fat and thin. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I am by no means a thin person. And when I took it, same as you, be moderately toward in favor of people who are thin. So I found it surprising. Was that your reaction as well?
I was. I was a bit surprised. But thinking more about it, it made sense. That even though I grew up with a mother who worked outside the home and I eventually got there as well, my culture has embedded itself in my brain and I still have those biases.
Bob, is it tough for people to take this test? I know one of the things they warn you about on the website when you're going in to take it is that you can find out some disturbing things right about yourself.
Yeah, I don't think any of us like thinking that we're biased in ways especially that contradict our expressed values. But I was thinking of another example, and Gabe can probably speak to this. My understanding is that even among African Americans, you'll find a bias toward lighter skin that certainly they wouldn't choose, but shows up just because of the cultural indoctrination.
There's a wonderful story about that. Bishop Desmond Tutu was interviewed by Krista Tippett, the noted journalist, and he talked about growing up under apartheid where blacks were presumed to be far less competent, less intelligent, less able. And he was taking a flight. He was in Nigeria and getting on a flight to go to another city for the National Council of Churches. And while he was sitting on the plane, the two pilots got on the plane and they were both black. And he swelled with pride to realize that we now had black people who could fly major big jet planes. And not soon after takeoff, they hit some very serious turbulence. And his first reaction to that was, oh my, no white pilots up there.
Oh no.
He was a brave man to acknowledge this so publicly. But that's a good example of
the way that bias works.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing that folks have found in studying implicit bias and the race implicit bias is about 50% of African Americans, it's split really between a pro-white and pro-African American bias. So you have a kind of even split there where the majority of white test takers will have a bias against African Americans in that case. That's an interesting one where you have a split. Another case is with poor, a bias against the poor. About 90% of test takers have a bias against the poor. That's alarming and striking how overwhelming that particular bias is.
Are there, Gabe, certain implicit biases that are more typical? For instance, tall men are viewed as more positive. Are there things like that this test brings out?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, I think the amazing thing that the test does is it finds broad patterns, and that these implicit biases are pervasive. No one is really able to escape them. We might have different ones. It might be varying degrees, moderate or strong, but they're essentially universal. You might suggest it's almost a part of human nature to have these implicit biases. We can't help but absorb the context, the social and political and values which we're situated in and which we're raised in.
How accurate are these tests? How do we know they're valid?
That's a great question. One of the best ways you know they're valid is through continually doing them. They end up being predictive. So one can take a bias test and then put that person in a context and see how their behavior changes in that context. So the test will predict the kind of behavior that people might have, where they'll exhibit smiles toward one person and of a certain maybe body type or race where they wouldn't in another case. So the test can predict that. So that's a marker of validity. Over 14 million people have taken these tests. The other thing is you might suggest that it's intuitive. It's hard to imagine that we could be consciously aware of all of our beliefs, of all of our attitudes. We really have a limited brain capacity, but the brain is doing much more. And it's not surprising to find out that there are things about ourselves that we are unaware of that are informing our actions, our beliefs, and our decisions. And what this test and others are able to do is to help us become aware of those, which is important because we want to find ways to mitigate them, to regulate them, and to reduce the effect of these biases on ourselves.
Do you have your students take this test, Gabe?
I do.
What kind of reactions do you get?
Denial.
Denial.
Marxist denial.
Well, there's a lot of questions about the validity of the test that they have. They don't want it to be a valid test. They are often saddened. I have them do a reflection on it. And when I do it in the context of race and debates about racial justice. And there, African-American students are often very saddened to find that they have this bias. And it's really disturbing for them and for all of us. So I think most of us have a similar reaction to the test.
We will continue our conversation about implicit bias and beyond civility. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, as we talk about implicit bias, Xavier University Professor of Philosophy, Ethics, Religion, and Society, Dr. Gabe Gottlieb, Senior Mediator for the Center for Resolution of Disputes, B. Larson, and retired Chief Circuit Mediator, United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, Robert Rack. And you can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Bob, tell us some about Beyond Civility, how the group got formed in the first place.
Well, it was really formed as a response to or in recognition of the impact or the impasse that we've reached with all of the polarization of opinion and politics. So as politics seem to be getting uglier and more controversial, a group of people, a bipartisan group of sort of leading politically involved folks in Cincinnati and Hamilton County developed this nonprofit group to promote civility. And when I say civility, I mean for effective communication about controversial topics that encourage more dialogue, more understanding, hopefully more collaboration, better governance for a whole diverse society. So we began looking at what stands in the way, what trips us up with having those kinds of conversations. So, you know, Bea and I were involved early as mediators because we spent our lives and careers working on how to resolve, how to communicate and solve problems. And so we came up with a variety of programs to begin to address that, and as you mentioned, including communication workshops and various public programs as well as private ones to sort of facilitate that. Early on, we discovered how critical biases are, explicit or implicit. And in fact, if you Google cognitive bias, you'll find literally hundreds of them that are documented psychological features of our thinking and our psychology that steer us in various directions, not typically toward the more accurate, the more fact-based, or the more truthful ones, but in ones that serve the in the service of our preconceived beliefs. So this is a very good topic, a very good example for Beyond Civility to, again, reach in and try to understand how it is we're tripping ourselves up even better than we do.
Bea, I think that the name of the group is interesting, too, Beyond Civility. It's
right.
Important to get beyond right. Just being civil.
We weren't just talking about being polite. We were talking about something much more, getting to know people in a way that would enhance their ability to problem solve. And what we came to realize was that the way to do that was to build relationships. Once people on opposite sides of various issues could come together, could learn more about the formation of their attitudes and their beliefs from very young time on forward, they were able to talk to each other in a very different way. There was less demonizing of people who had different beliefs.
Give me an example. Usually what you do is when you have a program, you have two speakers who go up and they debate each other. They're usually on opposite sides of an issue. And
right. They're
that
not
gives
debates. They're not
okay.
debates
okay.
in
so,
any sense. Our side-by-side programs are two people of different, often different political parties or different belief systems who are asked questions about their early years. How did their family fit into the fabric of society? What was discussed around the dinner table? Who were the people that were admired? Political people, etc. And on up through their teenage years, and what were their cohorts' belief systems? So by the time that exchange has taken place, you have two people who may have been working together in a political body for years, but who never knew these things about each other. And that, what I like to say often is friends open our eyes. And these people's eyes are open both to their audience, who get to know these leaders in a very different way.
Mark, I think the debates you were thinking of are what we call back-to-backs, and we sort of jokingly call them reverse debates. So
okay.
that's where we take high-profile advocates on opposite sides of a current serious political issue or social issue and have them present the other side's point of view, and to do so convincingly that the other person says, I couldn't have said it better myself. So these present very interesting programs for audiences and a real challenge for the participants, the presenters, who really have to learn a lot about the other point of view that they probably didn't know before the program.
You know, one example of that was we had a program on the death penalty, and we had David Singleton of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center and Joe Dieters taking opposite views, arguing opposite to their own actual personal belief system. And it was a fascinating...
About the death penalty.
Yeah. It was really quite fascinating.
What kind of reaction do you get from people to the work that you're doing?
Pretty positive. I think everybody recognizes that we really have a problem, and I think nobody really knows how to solve it. So the fact that somebody's trying kind of wins support all by itself.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And going back to the implicit bias, Gabe, I take one of these tests, I find out that I have a bias to some degree? Because I think it ranks you, right? It's slight, moderate, or strong. You find out you have some degree of bias. Does this necessarily mean, depending on the category that you're taking the test in, does it mean you're racist or sexist?
I don't think it does. There's an important distinction that one should make, and that's between possessing a bias and endorsing a belief. And one might possess a pro-male or pro-white bias, but not endorse that and not endorse the belief that the white race is superior or that males are superior or that males are intelligent. Racism, I think, or an important part of racism, is the actual endorsement of those beliefs, the endorsement of stigmatizing hostile beliefs. And so with that distinction between endorsing and possessing, I think we can see that there is a difference between being a racist or being a sexist and happening to possess a bias.
So what do you do? How do you overcome these implicit biases as you uncover them and discover them? What are some things you can do?
I had an interesting experience in discovering, taking the test on skin tone, black as opposed to lighter skin tones, and discovering that I, and surprised, to learn that I had a slight bias in favor of lighter skin tones. When I thought about it, I thought, well, you know, that really makes sense. I grew up in an era where our society was totally segregated. I knew no black people until I got into high school, and then only two, and they were both fair-skinned. And my associations later on in law school were with fair-skinned black people, relatively. But through Beyond Civility, I came to know, the person I came to know best is a remarkable woman by the name of Karen Bankston, who is very, very dark-skinned, PhD, was the CEO of Drake Hospital for several years and is now the associate dean at the School of Nursing for the university, and got to know her in a very different way. I now know about her personal life, her early years, her formative years, and she knows about mine. And I think that slight bias has changed because of that experience.
I think one of the best ways to regulate or mitigate these biases is through that kind of contact, intergroup contact. If it's race, interracial contact. If it's if it's sexual biases, gender biases, intergroup contact, and also seeing counter stereotype representations. So many of the representations we get in the media are representations that affirm certain stereotypes that we have. And some research has shown that through exposure to counter stereotypes, the biases can be mitigated. One other thing just worth noting is blind review and blind assessment when going through job applications and so on, taking names off resumes. The names can actually trigger a bias. And I think importantly, training people, informing them of what implicit biases are and training them to regulate them or mitigate them and finding strategies. There's a lot of research to be done there, though.
This is Cincinnati Edition, and we'd like to say thanks to Jim Brown for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. Gabe Gottlieb, B. Larson, and Robert Rack join me this afternoon as we talk about implicit bias, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. Do we need to be cautious, though, Gabe, about how this test is used? The Implicit Project itself has a warning against using it outside of an educational scope, avoiding areas like jury selection, employment issues, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, there's a lot of ethical dimensions to this. And I think with that test, the way they have it set up online is it's not a scientific test in the sense that you're determining exactly what your bias is. It's a way to learn about what implicit biases are and to gain an introduction, if you will, to them. There are ethical issues all around this. One is, what is our obligation to do something about these implicit biases? If you're aware of it, what obligation do you have? And even if you're not aware of it, do you have an obligation to become aware of it? That's a really interesting ethical question.
I think it might be pointed out that recognizing your implicit biases is not only a boon to the person about whom you're biased, but there's a lot of self-interest in that. If you're hiring people who look like yourself because you trust people who look like yourself, you may be hiring the wrong person for the job, so that it's a, I think self-interest is involved here.
Another example, and these are, again, mitigation-type strategies, you can also impose like an external discipline to protect against the imposition of a bias. And a classic example is orchestra auditions. So for years, orchestras tended to hire males rather than females. And when they started doing blind auditions behind a screen, and then subsequently even learning to cushion the floor so you can't hear the footsteps, lo and behold, far more female musicians were winning their way into orchestras. So there are external disciplines we can try to impose if we're aware of a bias.
Yeah, and it's an eye-opener to take this test and learn
sure
what your biases are.
Right. Disturbing.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Bernadine in Hyde Park. Hi, Bernadine.
Hi. I am so glad that this test has come about, because not that all tests are infallible, but it certainly will be helpful. I grew up with a lot of prejudice in Hyde Park. I had no black people, and only two went to my high school. It was a very segregated, in the whole school, there were only two black girls. It was an all-girls school. And when I got out to the workplace, I felt bad about it. I felt bad inside, and I didn't know what to do. I realized that I had this, and when I got into the workplace, I had an older woman who was a mentor, and she is African-American, and this was like 50 years ago, and she and I are friends to this day because I told her that I was raised with a lot of prejudice, and it bothered me. And she, you know, she took me under her wing, and we're friends. And the proof to me that it's been working somewhat is that I had a patient who was a young black teenager who lost his kidneys to drug addiction. And, you know, when you do dialysis, you spend a lot of time with them. I told him I was raised with a lot of prejudice. And he said, "Bernadine, you act so natural that I thought you were raised with black people."
Congratulations.
And that was a compliment. That was a compliment. And to this day, I use that. But see, I mean, you know, we need to find about sexism, because we still have a lot of sexism and other things that we were, you know, raised with. And I would love to find out about this test and take us. I know I got more work to do.
Well, we have a link to that at our website, wvxu.org, where you can look up the test itself. And
fabulous.
Thank you, Bernadine. We appreciate the call. You know, it's interesting, Gabe. Again, this is, you know, once you start to root out what your biases are, then you can start working on them. It's not like they're set in stone.
Right. I think that's the case. And like I said before, there's a lot to learn. We're learning that we have these biases. We're learning how entrenched they are. But there's still a lot to learn about how we uproot them and how we mitigate against them. One example, though, I think that Bernadine mentioned with race, but we can take that also to class and poverty. We live in a segregated society, and Cincinnati is segregated in lots of ways. And if you think about segregation in terms of economic segregation, it's easy to see also how when you grow up around wealthy people, you develop a bias against poor people, or where you don't have exposure to poor people, you develop a bias and a certain attitude about what those people are like. Also, with mental health, we often keep mental health inside. We don't talk about it. We don't realize how pervasive depression is. We're, in a sense, segregated when it comes to mental health because it's so secretive. Well, it turns out that we develop biases with respect to mental health in terms of thinking of those who are suffering from mental health issues as more dangerous. If we knew how pervasive mental health issues were, we might not think that way or have that bias. I shouldn't say think that way. We might not have that implicit unconscious bias.
And wrapping things up, tell us about the panel discussion that you have coming up on April 12th. Give us the details on that.
Right. April 12th, we'll be meeting at HUC in Meyerson Hall, and we have four panelists. You may have to help me here, Bob. John Pepper, Ozzie Davis, Shaquila Ahmad.
And Jonathan Cohen.
And Jonathan Cohen, all people in leadership positions. And they've all agreed to take a number of these tests and talk about their own results and their reactions to those results. And then the audience is also going to have an opportunity. Quite a few members of our audience will have taken the tests and will also speak to their experience.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Xavier University Professor of Philosophy, Ethics, Religion, and Society, Dr. Gabe Gottlieb, Senior Mediator for the Center for Resolution of Disputes, B. Larson, and Retired Chief Circuit Mediator, United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, Robert Rack. Beyond Civility, they're going to be presenting Implicit Bias, Understanding How Your Biases May Contradict Your Chosen Values, at Hebrew Union College. That's on Tuesday evening, April the 12th. And you can find a link to more information at WVXU.org. WVXU is a media partner for Beyond Civility. Coming up, keeping track of air quality in the Cincinnati area. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.